Right. Okay.
There you go.
Okay, page 64 in the Stone Chumashim, Perek Yudalid, Pasuk Chafala, Bechamishi. Story until now, four kings, five kings, captured light, Avram goes, brings back light with Eliezer. Finally, he comes back, and with the people and everything, and all the spoils of war and everything, and Malki Tzedek, the king of what he said, there was the son of Shem, it was Shem, the son of Noach. He was the king of Yerushalayim, and because he was a Kohen, Avraham Avinu gave him 10% of everything. The last thing we learned. By the way, there's an interesting thing over here, because the pasuk seems to imply that Avraham Avinu gave a tenth of his properties, of his earnings, to Malki Tzedek, because he was Kohen Lekel Elyon. The Rambam says no. It's interesting. The Rambam writes that the first one to do circumcision was Avram. Right? First one to tithe, to give Maaser, was Yitzchak Avinu. So the question is, we find here that Avram Avinu did give Maaser. Why is the Rambam saying that Yitzchak was the first one, you know, that he was the first one to give Maaser, when we find Avram Avinu was really the first one to give Maaser? So the Ravid asks on the Rambam this question. He says, how can the Rambam say Yitzchak was the first? Avraham Avinu was the first. So the commentary called the Radvaz, something like this. He didn't actually give the Maaser as we know it. Meaning, the mitzvah of tithing that the Torah speaks about is really produce. You have produce, you have to give a Kohen Truma and a Levi Maaser, right, 10%. These are all things that the Torah speaks about agricultural maaser. The first one to give agricultural maaser from the land, that was Yitzchak Avinu. This that Avraham Avinu gave Malki Tzedek was Tami, gave him a gift of 10%. It's not the mitzvah of tithing that the Torah speaks about, because the Torah only speaks about animals, maaser behema. If you have animals that grew that year, you put them into a pen, and they walk into a narrow passage, and you count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. The tenth one you whip, you hit it with a stick that has like a red dye on it, that you should remember this is the animal that was tied, and then another 10. But the biblical mitzvah that we really know of as Maaser, and that's how the Radvasi, that's what the Rambam's talking about. The Rambam, when he says that Yitzchak was the first one to tithe, he means tithing of agriculture. Avraham Avinu gave him, 10% for all generations.
Did Yitzchak give it to Malki Tzedek too?
No, Yitzchak, he wasn't with Malki Tzedek at that time.
So who did Yitzchak give the Maaser to?
People that served God. Good question. But people that served God. Okay, now, another concept that why the Rambam says Yitzchak was the first one to tithe instead of Avram, because what's the concept of tithing? Tithing means it's my land, I worked it, it's my produce. So the Torah says, by the way, just keep in mind that without Hashem, you don't have any of this. Hashem makes it grow. Okay? So therefore, what's the concept of Maaser? The realization that Hashem is part of the ownership of the land, so to speak. So therefore, we have to give 10%. Not 90%, 10%. This battle that Avraham Avinu won now was so miraculous. Him and Eliezer won against the strong four kings that conquered the five kings. So it was a miraculous war. If it was a miraculous war, everything he made from the war was miraculous. So of course it belonged to God. Nobody's going to think it belongs to me, that you need a reminder that, God is part of the land, so you have to give him 10%. Therefore, the Rambam says, who is the first one that gave Maaser? in a way when it was natural growing and natural harvesting and natural thing, in a way to remind ourselves that it's Hashem's field also, that was Yitzchak Avinu. And that's what the Rambam says, Yitzchak versus Avram was really the first one to give the mice. Okay. So now the pasuk starts in Chamishi like this. Vayomer Melech Zdeim al Avram, the king of Zdeim, said to Avram, Ten li anefesh, give me the soul, meaning the people, the luchush kachloch, and you could take all the spoils. 64. Or 65 in the English. Okay, what happened is, and the Torah now is interesting, Melech Zdeim, in the few psukim we learned last week, was the first one to go greet them. But he didn't say anything. He just went to meet them. Malki Tzedek brought out wine and things, right? Wine, and he brought out bread. So, okay, but now, after Malki Tzedek got the 10% from Avram Avinu, he said, oh, 1 minute, there's something here for me too. So now he woke up, and he said to Avram, okay, you know what? Give me the people. I want to repopulate my country, because the country was destroyed by the kings. He said, give me the people, I want to repopulate my country, and you keep the possessions. Okay?
It's kind of surprising.
What?
It's usually like, never shy and want the presents, the gifts.
Huh?
Usually people are like Sodom, they want to be into the world.
No, but he had said he can't be a king without a nation.
Right.
If there were no people, in fact, we'll soon get to, Avram Avinu felt bad later that he did it.
He gave him the people?
That he gave him the people. What happened from Zdeim afterwards?
That's true.
They were corrupt people. Avram Avinu, later, Avram felt guilty, by the way, for giving back the people. Because Avram realized, if I didn't get back the people of Zdeim, they wouldn't be a Zdeim with the wickedness and evil that the angels had to come and destroy the city of Zdeim. So Avram blamed himself, really, for repopulating the country of Zdeim. But he says like this, give, and the property take lots. Okay. Vayemer Avram HaMelech Zdeim. So Avram said, by the way, it's brought down that because of this, Avram's children were exiled in Egypt. That's what the Medrash says. The Medrash says, because Avram Avinu, instead of teaching these people from Zdeim that he captured, okay, if he captured the people, he could have taught them about belief in God. What did he do? He gave them back, and they became this corrupt country. So because of that, it says in the Medrash that Avram Avinu's children ended up being...
Maybe he thought the king would teach him Yiddishkeit. I don't know.
He wouldn't. Because he didn't believe.
Well, the king was an unbeliever?
Yeah. Avram Avinu was a lone individual. He was all by himself in belief of God. That's why he's called Avram Ivri, in Hebrew. Ivri means he's on one side of the world and everybody else was against him. Everybody else literally was against Avram. Okay, you closed it. You closed it. Leave it. I think it closed, no? Yeah, you're close. So he says he was, you know, punished because of it. Okay. So Avram says like this. According to the Medrash, by the way, Avram Avinu only gave back the adults, not the children that they captured. Avram kept the children to raise them as proper believers in God. Okay, so he says like this. V'yem Avram HaMelech Zdeim. Avram said to the king of Zdeim like this. Harimesi yadi al Hashem kel elyon. I'm going to lift up my hand, which is an expression of a vow. You know, in the olden days, they picked up their hands and they made a vow. He made basically a vow to God. Kainei Shamayim V'Odis, the maker of heaven and earth. What vow did he make? Imichut v'atzreich now. I am not going to take a thread or a shoe strap Im ekach mikol ashelach, he swore, Avraham Avinu, I am not going to take a thing from you, not a thread, not a shoestring, nothing. Says, Im ekach mikol ashelach, I'm not taking anything. Why? Listen to this. You shouldn't say, Ani ashavti es Avraham, I was Avraham, I was the one that made Avraham rich. Okay, it's a very interesting concept over here, by the way. Avraham said, I don't want later on, you wicked king, to be able to say, I made Avraham rich. Avraham had no association with evil whatsoever. He wanted to be disassociated from evil to the extent he didn't want to have property that evil forces might say, oh, I was the one that gave it to you. I was the one that made you rich. So Avraham said, I refuse to take anything. Not even from a thread to a shoe strap. So it's interesting. Rashi doesn't say. The Medrash says, because of this phrase, Avraham Avinu merited two mitzvahs. Tcheles and tefillin. Okay?
That's why Persian prayed darkness.
No, they think something's going to fall down from heaven. They're not swearing. You don't swear when you're daven. You don't make a vow when you're daven. When you're daven, you're daven. No, you know why people don't? Because of pasuk pesach hasidecha, open up your hand. So when they're davening, they're asking Hashem to open up his hand to give the brach. I don't think they actually believe something's going to...
This is before Avraham did the bris, right? So
Avraham Avinu, this is before the bris. This is before bris ben Absalom.
But I've seen also the other bris, too.
Yeah.
So had it been that, he would have made the vow on the bris, right?
Yeah.
To do with Eliezer.
Correct. But he had nothing to swear on now. Right. So he just picked up his hand and he said like this. The strap, he says... Even the most insignificant thing, I don't want to have anything to do with. Okay, now, the Gemara in Chulin says, refusing to have accept the thread and the shoe strap, the thread refers to tcheles, you know, the blue wool on the tzitzis, and the strap refers to the strap of tefillin. Now, because, it's interesting, the Mefarshim say, the Meshech Chachma says, who instituted Shachris? Avraham Avinu. Huh? Avraham. Why do we wear talis and tefillin at Shachris? Why do we wear it at Mincha? Because Avraham Avinu merited, because of this saying, thread or shoestring, the shoe strap, which is leather, right? He got the mitzvah of talis and tefillin. So because he got the mitzvah of Taos, Avraham Avinu got the mitzvah of Taos and Tefillin, and Avraham Avinu instituted Shachris, that's the reason why we wear Taos and Tefillin at Shachris, not at Mincha or any other times. Okay. Now, because of this, it's interesting. By the way, it says, not only that, other Midrashim say, he merited to have the Mishkan, which had the blue and purple wool. Thread refers to the sacrifices. There was a, you know, you say in davening, and they say, okay, some blood they had to squirt on the top half of the Mizbeach, some blood they had to squirt at the bottom half of the altar. So there was a scarlet string that actually went around exactly the middle of the Mizbeach, that the Kohen would know where half of the Mizbeach was for the top half and bottom half. Then he also got, and the thread, which is the scarlet thread that, on the Azazel that turned white on Yom Kippur, whatever. And not only that, also because of the shoe strap, the children got the mitzvah chalitza. Chalitza is a guy dies without children, so technically the brother has to marry her, or if he doesn't want it, then he has to do chalitza. These are all things, by the way, what Avraham Avinu merited by refusing to take anything from this wicked king of the day. even though legally it was his. He didn't have to give anything to anybody. He conquered it. But the fact that the Zdeim says to him, you keep the properties, it's very interesting. It was Avraham Avinu's stuff. He conquered it in war. Only Israelis give back land that they conquer in war. No other country in the world ever won, had a battle and conquered land and gave it back. Only the Israelis do. Okay? But they get, it's not a joke. The Rebbe was screaming about this. It's the only place in the world where you conquer land and then you give it back. Anyway, so it's really everything belonged to Avraham Avinu. When the king of Zem says, give me the people and you take the properties, Avraham Avinu could say, who are you? I mean, who are you coming in here? But the fact that the king of Zem could have thought that I'm going to be giving Avraham properties, he's going to think, oh, you see, I'm the one that made him rich. And Avraham Avinu said, I don't want that. I don't want a guy to be able to say he made me what I am. And many tzaddikim use this pasuk. By the way, throughout history, when Goyim wanted to give things to the Jews said, no, I don't want you to say, Ani Asharti Savram, that the Goyim made the Jew rich. Okay? That's that whole thing. But there's another interesting thing. You know, the Mephoshim says, speak about it over here, so mention here. There's a din in Halacha. You know, normally, a right-handed person does everything first with the right. Left-handed person does everything with the left. Because that's their right hand. So for instance, you're making a bracha, you hold the food in your right hand when you make a bracha. You make kiddush, you hold the cup in your right hand. You hold the lulav in the right hand. Everything is the right hand, right? You take a shower, according to halacha, you're supposed to wash the right side first. Right hand, then the left hand, right leg, left leg. That's the way halacha is said, because right is more important than left. So therefore, for instance, when you put on shoes, in the morning, okay, you put on your right shoe first, and then you put on the left shoe.
What if your left?
And left, then it's reverse. Because your right, your left is your right. Right represents the more prominent hand. So left-handed person, their right hand is their left hand. Okay? Now, according to Halacha, you put the right shoe first, then you put on the left shoe, then you tie the left first, and then the right. That's the halacha in Shulchan Aruch. Even though everything else, right comes before left. So why tying, do we tie the left shoe first? You know, you put on the right shoe, then the left shoe, and then you tie the left, and then you tie the right. Yeah, but why do you do it like that? Because tefillin, which we tie, ukshartam, tie, which hand do we put on tefillin? On the left hand. So therefore, tefillin tying left as precedence over right. And by a left hand is the opposite again. The right hand is the weaker hand, so they would tie the right shoe first because they put tefillin on the right hand. But because by tefillin tying, the halacha is tying is more prominent in the left because that's where you put on tefillin. And the Torah says, ukshartam, you tie it as a sign. So therefore, tying, you tie the left shoe first. So in other words, you put in your right sleeve first, then your left sleeve. You put in your right pant leg first, and then the left. And then you put on your right shoe, and then the left shoe. But tying, you tie the left shoe first, and then the right shoe. By the way, if you don't have laces, don't worry about it.
Just put on the right and the left.
Yeah, then you put on the right and the left. Okay. But that's the reason why time, it's all part of this mitzvah that Avraham Avinu merited, because he said, in Mechut Vatzrech now, he didn't want to have anything to do with them. Okay? Okay. But Avraham Avinu made a condition. Raka she'ochlo an ha'orim, the expenses what the men have eaten, the chelek ha'anoshim asher holchu iti, and the part of the people that went with me to war, and he says aner eshkol u'mamri, those were buddies of Avraham Avinu, by the way, hem yichu chelkom, they should also take their part. Okay.
Weren't
there
cities also?
Huh?
Weren't there cities named after them? Cities in Israel named after them?
On the Eshkol Mamre? Mamre, there is. In Chumash, there's Beloini Mamre. That's where Avram Avinu had the bris. Mamre, on the Eshkol Mamre, were good friends of Avram Avinu, by the way. They were tzaddikim, they were righteous people. But here there's another, a few important issues that needs to be discussed. Avraham Avinu says, first of all, Hashem promised me wealth. Hashem promised me I'm going to make you rich. Lechucho, v'eschu l'goy godol, v'avorechucho, v'agadlu shmecho. Like we're in the beginning of Lechucho, Hashem said I'm going to make you rich. So Avraham Avinu said, listen, God promised to make me rich. I'm relying on God's promise to make me rich. I don't want you to make me rich. I'm relying on God to make me rich. Number one. Number two, he says, I want the people that went with me, they should get paid. Number one, the expenses. It says, Raka sha'ochlu anorim, what they ate, v'chelok anorim sha'och iti, that they have to, the ones that, the disciples that came with me, what we ate, but even Avraham Avinu didn't even partake of the food that they ate. By the way, there's an interesting thing. It's a Maimer HaMosger. It's an interesting story. The previous Rebbe, before he became Rebbe, used to give a lot of money to his father, for tzedakah, to the Rebbe Rashab. One time he went on a trip for his father. Well, this is a very important lesson, by the way. He went on a trip for his father. And he came back, and his father said to him, give me your expenses. I mean, tell me what your expenses were. See, basically, he's laughed at it because he gave his father much more money than the, whatever the expenses were that he laid out. So he said, you know, big deal. I give you more than that anyway. What's the problem? And his father told him, his printer, his father told him an interesting thing, that if you have expenses and you don't take back the expenses, the money for the expenses, the evil forces can prosecute him. They can make problems with him. Why don't you give tzedakah? Give tzedakah. You laid out money for expenses, that money you have to take back. If not, for whatever reason, the evil forces can have a problem. Huh? Satan, the Yitzhar, you know, I mean, Malachim Ovis, the evil guys.
Why? Because it sounds like you're flaunting your money?
No. Because what you give out expenses, that you need to take back. He didn't say a reason. He just said that the forces of evil can get in the way. Another thing, the Chofetz Chaim says a very interesting lesson from this story now. And he says like this. Avraham Avinu refused to take money for himself, right? But his servants, Aner Eshkol Mamre, the people who went to war, he told them to take the money.
Why would you tell them?
What's that? He told them, you take money for yourself. I'm not taking, but you take.
But
one second. He said like this. The Chofetz Chaim says, Avraham was especially stringent in his own conduct by refusing to benefit in any way from his staying. To those who accompany him, however, he was not as stringent. This is what the Chofetz Chaim said. The lesson to be derived from this, regarding your own conduct, everyone has the choice to be more religious than the other, than the law requires. But don't force it on other people. You want to be through, Avraham Avinu, halachically, was allowed to take the spoils. He was allowed to take the money, right? He decided to be above and beyond the letter of the law. He decided to be super frum, and he said, I'm not taking the expenses. Yeah? But, he said, for the other people, not at their expense. Many people don't think they have a chumr, they have a strictness, and they want to dump it on other people to keep. This story teaches Avraham Avinu didn't do that. Avraham Avinu said, what I'm doing is my business. The other people, they should take it. They should take the money. He didn't want to impose his personal strictness on somebody else. It's a very important lesson, by the way, in life. We find a similar thing, what we learned to be earlier in Chumash. Yaakov Avinu was thought kept the whole Torah before it was given. Right? Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov kept the Torah before it was given. So all the commentaries ask a question. Is a clear pasuk in Chumash, you're not allowed to marry two sisters while they're alive. Okay? If you marry a woman, yeah? We read it in the Kriya Yom Kippur at Mincha. It's a pasuk in Chumash. It's capital punishment with mamzer, with everything under the sun. It says, if you marry a woman, you cannot marry her sister as long as your wife is alive. Which means, even if you divorced her, you're not allowed to marry her sister as long as this girl is alive. Historically, even today, by the way, we find historically in Jewish history, I know a few cases in today's world, that somebody married a girl, and they died never very young, and then they married the sister, because there's already, you know, she knew the kid, she knew it was already, so then they married the sister. But while this first wife is alive, you're not allowed to marry two sisters.
All right.
So everybody asked the question, how did Yaakov Avinu marry Leah and Rachel? It's two sisters. You're not allowed to marry two sisters. It's biblically forbidden to marry two sisters. And Yaakov Avinu kept the Torah before it was given. So how could he do it? So some commentaries interestingly answer that Yaakov Avinu only kept Torah in Israel. Outside of Israel, he didn't keep Torah. Only while he was in Israel. Therefore, they say that, you know, when Rachel died, when did Rachel die? As soon as he came back into Israel, Rachel died, because then he couldn't marry the two sisters. And Leah was married first. So who was the forbidden one? Rachel. So Rachel died right away when Binyamin was born. Okay? But Rashi doesn't hold like that, because Rashi says in Lavan Garti that even by Lavan he kept the whole Torah. So the question is, how was Yaakov Avinu allowed to marry Rachel and Leah when the Torah says you're not allowed to marry two sisters?
Because they thought he was marrying Rachel.
Yeah, but the bottom line is he didn't marry Leah. Oh, so what's the answer? So the Rebbe explains according to Pshat. He explains because Rashi doesn't ask the question. If you look at Rashi and Chumash, there's an obvious question. It's against the Pasuk and Chumash. Why doesn't Rashi answer the question how Yaakov Avinu was able to marry two sisters? And Rashi says Yaakov kept the whole Torah all over the place. So why doesn't Rashi? So Rebbe explains in Pshat this very interesting answer, which is the same lesson as this, basically. This that Yaakov Avinu kept Torah, he wasn't obligated to keep it. Torah wasn't given yet. He wasn't obligated to keep Torah. Why did he keep the Torah? He wanted to be more religious than the law. Right? Halachically, he didn't have to keep it. He wanted to keep it because he wanted to be above and beyond the letter of the law. Torah wasn't given yet, but he wanted to do it anyway. So the Rebbe explains, the way Rashi would explain it is as follows. You can only go above and beyond the letter of the law if you want to be machmir, yeah? Not at the expense of something that you must keep. You can't be machmir in a certain law, and because of that, you're not going to keep a law that you really should be keeping. What does that mean? Very simple. Yaakov promised Rachel he's going to marry her. He promised her, I'm going to marry you. Right? So what happened? Now he got messed up, and Lavan stuck in Leah over there, and therefore he married Leah. Correct? Now Yaakov has a dilemma. If I want to be a very super from Jew and keep the Torah, then I'm not going to be able to marry Rachel. Right? But I promised her I'm going to marry her. And a promise you have to keep. That's not strictness. That's not machmir. That's basic decency. He promised Rachel he's going to marry her. He has to marry her. It's coming at the expense of his being super frum. Tough luck. Instead, you can't impose something which is above and beyond the letter of the law at the expense of somebody else. Like over here, Avraham Avinu said, I don't want to take the money. That's my business. I'm not going to impose that level of belief in Hashem and Amuna and trust in Hashem to the servants, to the people that went with me. I'm not going to do it. It's not right. Just see, Yaakov Avinu said, I'm not going to impose that I'm going to break my promise to Rachel because I'm super fanatic. It's not, you don't do that.
Could it also be because if Yaakov Avinu didn't marry both of them, Leah might have to marry Esau?
No, but that wasn't going to happen anyway. That's originally what they thought.
Because they were also the only ones.
Yeah, but that didn't happen with Billy. Okay. Next. Okay. This starts the famous thing that's called Bris Bein Apsarim. This is the famous covenant that Hashem made with Avraham Avinu. Before we start this, there's a little problem that we mentioned at the beginning of Lach Lecha. At the beginning of the Parsha Lach Lecha, okay, when Avraham Avinu went out and then he ended up in Egypt and then the war, all this stuff, yeah? The pasuk says Avraham Avinu was 75. The beginning of Lach Lecha, that's before the story of Pari with Sarah, everything before. Okay? So he says like this. Vavram ben chame shana v'shivim shana b'tzeisim yichodan. Pasuk says before, Avraham Avinu was 75 when the beginning of the parasha happened. At this Bein Abris Bein Apsarim, that the Bris Apsarim mean they went through the broken, the cut up calves, whatever. According to the simple calculations of the Pasuk, he was 70. That means this Bris Bein Apsarim, that God told him your kids are going to be enslaved in Egypt, and they're going to be there for 400 years, and you're going to have a kid Yitzchak, and the whole thing that happened 5 years before everything that happened until now. Then Avraham was 75, now he's 70.
So what's the problem?
Nothing. There's a rule in Torah. In many times, there's no chronological order in Torah. Things that happened later are spoken about earlier. Okay, so it says like this. Achar advarim ha'ela, after these things, what things? So Rashi says, after the victory over the kings, okay? And Rashi says, by the way, the commentaries explain, when it says achar, it means immediately after. If somebody says, vayi acharei hadvarim ha'ela, it means not immediately after. Achar means immediately after. Acharei, which also means after, means not immediately after. Okay? It was a considerable time. Hoyedvar Hashem el Avram b'machaz elemer. Okay? Hashem told Avram in a prophecy, in a vision. This is a very interesting concept. What is b'machaze? Simply means in a vision. Is it prophecy? Is it higher than prophecy? Is it lower than prophecy? What is it? So the Medrash says, by the way, there's 10 expressions of God revealing himself to people. There's Nevuah, there's Chazain, there's Vayedaber, there's Hatafa, Amira, Tzivoy, Masa, Marshal, Melitza, Chida, okay? Now, some people say the highest vision is Machazeh, okay? Which means what the Torah says here, vision. But, here.
Is there Aspachlaria too?
The Zayir says, the word, by the way, Machazeh, is not a Hebrew word. The Gemara says Machazeh is an Aramaic word. It means a vision. Okay? Now, in the Zayir it says, Rabbi Yossi said, there are many Aramaic words in the Torah. Okay? So this language, another interesting Gemara, no angel except Gavriel understands Aramaic. The Talmud says, the Gemara says, the angels understand all languages except Aramaic, for whatever reason. Okay? So when God now is revealing himself to Avram Avinu, God didn't want the angels to know it. So therefore the Zohar says, God uses the word bamachazah, which means vision in Aramaic. He didn't want the angels to know about it. He shouldn't come to criticize or coming up against it and so on. Another interesting thing, because Avraham Avinu was not circumcised yet. Avraham Avinu didn't have the bris is at the end of the parasha. So again, he spoke to him in Aramaic that the angels shouldn't know. The angels can come along and say, why are you speaking to Avram with prophecy and this? He's not even circumcised yet. He still has the evil on him. Why are you speaking to him? So God said in language they didn't understand. Well, like it says in the Zayat, before Avram Avinu had a bris, so God only appeared to him in Aramaic, that the angels shouldn't understand. Afterwards, God already revealed himself to in Lashon Kodesh in Hebrew.
Is this a higher form of prophecy than Moshe Rabbeinu?
No. The greatest prophet that the Torah says clearly was Moshe Rabbeinu. Per Dabar Bein.
By the way, why do you need angels? Because I remember, like, by Saturday afternoon, when we were also doing the class, said, like, the walks into the room and those kind of Jews doing nothing to angel. What are angels?
Their job are messengers for God to get things done or to sing the praises to Hashem or various different missions God has. The three angels.
What's in it for me?
Huh?
What's in it for me?
What's in it for you? I'll tell you what. It says, in fact, in I'll tell you what it is. One of the Yom Kippur tefillahs we say by Ne'ilah, we say, Malachi Rachmim, angels of mercy, Hachnisu Rachameinu, enter our mercy before God. The angels, even as far as we're concerned in davening, the angels, sometimes a Jew needs, you know, we daven to Hashem. Sometimes there's not enough fuel to make it go up. I'm using physical words, but we're talking spiritual, okay? A person sometimes is not on a very lofty level. And therefore they're trying to daven to Hashem, that the prayer should go all the way up to Hashem, that Hashem should listen. Okay, so the angels actually help us, the middleman, they give a push up that our tefillah should be reaching Hashem.
And then is it true that angel?
It's called a mazel, which is the concept of an angel, but it's called a mazel. The Gemara says, Enoch kol eis of milmata, there's no blade of grass down here. Shenli mazel, hamaka baiva emer legadal. It hits it and says grow. Every thing has, okay, I'll give you another. You know about the, Yaakov Avinu fought the angel of Esav. So what does that mean? Every government, except the Jews, have an angel that's intermediary between God and that nation. There was an angel of Egypt that was complaining to God, why are you killing the Egyptians, saving the Jews? They're also worshipping idols. That was the angel of Egypt. That was the intermediary to be for the benefit of Egypt. Esav has, every nation has the malachim. They're called the Ayin Sodim, the 70 officers. They're actually angels. The concept, maybe is a difference between mazel and an angel, but basically, the mazel is the concept of an angel, which means like this. For everybody except the Jew, because we're the chosen guys, you know, we're made special, all the other creations in the world, from inanimate, plant, animal, and human, excluding Jews, have this intermediary between Hashem and them, which sustains them. In other words, the sustenance of these nations does not come directly from Hashem. It goes through the dealings of the angel, of the mazel, or the malach, whatever it may be. Jews are connected straight to God. We don't have these intermediaries. Which means, as the Gemara says, the expression, Ein mazel Yisrael, Jews don't have a mazel. We are direct connected to God. Then the question is, so why do you tell somebody mazel tov?
Right.
And you should have mishana mokim, mishana mazel. Your mazel should change. You should have a good mazel and all that stuff. So the explanation is, it goes through, the difference is, it goes through the mazolus, but we're not bound by the mazel. We can override the mazel. Goyim can't. What the mazel is, that's what it's going to be. Jews can override the mazel. And that's what it says. Ein mazel Yisrael means the Jews are not under the jurisdiction of mazel. They can override it. But there is a, you say mazel tov to a Jew, no? What?
But don't goyim have to believe in Hashem too?
Yeah, but they can believe that these constellations have their own power. And the Jew is not allowed to believe that. It's called shituf. Okay, next Monday,